Just identify yourself for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Bethany Hogan. I am a graduate of the Warwick Public Schools, 1st through 12th grade. I am a homeowner. I am a taxpayer. I am a voter. I am a Warwick school teacher. And my most important job is I am a parent of two boys who receive special education services in two different elementary schools in this city. Sure. That better? Hello. Okay. Sure. My greatest concern is not for my kindergartner at this point, because he's still really little, but I have a fifth grader at Hoxie, and in theory, he should be part of the new sixth grade class that moves to Vets next year. I teach at Vets, and I'll get to that in a minute. A few things that were brought to my attention at Ryan's school at Hoxie that is happening not there but at other elementary schools, and did happen at one of the junior highs a few years ago but was put to rest. Currently, students are being removed from their homerooms in their elementary schools. They are being placed, the IEP students, they are being placed with their special educators for that homeroom portion of the day. What that does is it takes them off of the regular educators roster, and it skews the numbers. It's very interesting how that works, because all of a sudden, a regular educator who has, say, 22 kids, well, four of his special ed students are somewhere else. So his roster only reflects that he has 22 students. If we get into the waiting portion, which, let's face it, we need to keep waiting, those four students now actually count as six or eight students, and his numbers now are at, instead of 22, are at 28 or 30. This is a huge problem. Not just because the numbers are skewed and the school committee and our illustrious superintendent are using these numbers to do all sorts of damage, they are using this time that my son should be with his peers, being included, a regular part of his day, very easy, a great time to socialize, and they're removing him to mess with numbers. Unacceptable. And I don't know how many schools it's happening in. I don't know how many kids are being affected. And I don't know how many rosters are being affected as a result. Thank you, everyone. Do we even abide by IDEA here? What is happening? This concept is flying in the face of inclusion. Least restrictive environment, is that gone from Warwick? Have we just said no more? We're not going to do that anymore? Yes, the numbers look good on paper. Congratulations to our administration. However, the cost to our kids is great. So my son, who's in fifth grade, he was born nearly 11 years ago, and he was diagnosed with Down syndrome. And he and Scott's stepson were at Special Olympics today. I was with both of them. I was so grateful that I lived in Warwick. We had such a great special education system, and I knew he was going to be okay. And now here I am, 11 years later, trying to figure out how to get out of the city, because we can't meet his needs. I know it because I see it, I hear it from his teachers, and I stand in front of my classes at Vets, and I can't meet their needs. The administration is tying my hands. I can't meet their IEPs, I'm violating them every day. My son should not be forced in the next few years to read Shakespeare, simply because, as Dr. Connolly puts it, he needs equal access to the curriculum. Dr. Connolly told me at a special ed advisory meeting that every student in the city needs to be treated as though he or she is attending college, which is nice, sounds good. However, look, no one fights harder for my kid's rights than me, and no one expects more from him than me. He's not going to college. I want him to be a productive member of society. Reading Shakespeare, or attempting to read Shakespeare, is not going to get him there. He needs skills. However, as I teach my classes, as I teach my co-taught class every day with 25 bodies and 11 IEPs, with reading levels that range from first grade to 12.9 plus in the same room, what am I supposed to do with that? How am I supposed to give all of those kids a proper education? My low-level kids, I should be working on skills. I should be teaching them how to write, I don't know, complete sentences, how to fill out forms, how to find the main idea in something that they're reading. My higher-level kids, I should be doing higher-level vocabulary, getting them ready to take those PSATs. I'm very sorry to the high schools who had to deal with that today. Complete waste of time and for another day. But half of my kids aren't going to be doing that. My son is not going to be doing that. And yet, we've pulled the programs that would give him what he needs. Our director says that grouping students by STANINES is antiquated. I'll tell you, I am a product of that antiquated system. We all learned really well. I taught in that antiquated system where we grouped kids as 1-4s and 4-6s. We're co-taught classes, we're 1-4 classes, and you had your very low-level IEP students in classes with kids who are slightly higher, but you could kind of teach the same material to, in, you know, and make modifications. I can't do that with my population. My colleagues can't do that with the population that they have. And you've got two entirely different breeds of kids in the same room. I've got them for 47 minutes. It can't be done. And trust me, I turn myself inside out every day trying to figure out ways to get it done. I beat myself up every day. I know I'm doing the best I can, but it's not enough for these kids. And in the end, it's the kids that'll pay, as always. I look at the two models. This is really my main concern. I look at the two models that he could possibly enter into next year at Vets, if he were to go to Vets, which obviously I can't allow to happen. One classroom, which was sold to several parents as an autism classroom, and it's not, they have 8 students in it. And basically, they're the 8 kids in the building who are alternatively assessed. So the kids who don't take the state testing are in the same room. Okay? They get alternate assessment. They all have IEPs, but they all have very different needs. There are students in there who are nonverbal. There are students in there who require diapering. There are students in there who have very, very significant needs. And then there are a few students who, as I have witnessed, I've popped into the classroom as a parent who may have a child in this model, who I see working. They're working on sorting and things like that. But there's no real curriculum going on as of right now. And as the teacher has informed me, she doesn't really have access to a curriculum that would meet the needs of this population, of really any portion of this population. The other model is the co-taught classroom that I have. As I said, I violate their IEPs every day. I can give them the same curriculum, and I can make modifications, and I can slow it down. So I have, and we all know what this looks like, I have a portion of my kids who are lost, I have a portion of my kids who are bored, and the rest of my kids are with me. I'm doing the best I can. But not tracking our kids, not grouping them appropriately, does not work. We can't teach this way. Not with 11 kids who are reading below a third grade level, 5 kids who are reading at high school level, all in the same room. It doesn't work. And so I fear that this school committee and our superintendent are building their careers on the backs of our most fragile students. I fear that the only way parents like myself are going to be able to ensure proper educations for their children will be through litigation. And that's not the way I want to go. I've never been one to say, well, I'm going to get an attorney, because I'm a problem solver and I'm an educator. And things can happen if we work together. Unfortunately, as I think we know, we're on different teams. We're fighting for our kids, and I don't know what they're fighting for. It comes down to the almighty dollar. Good for them. But our kids are not commodities. We can't be bought. And we will fight this, because there's no way that my son is walking into vets next year into one of those classrooms. It will not happen. Thank you.
Hi, Ken Gennaro. I'm a special education teacher now at Tollgate. I actually worked in one of the programs that Ms. McSwiggin referenced that was dismantled. The former student also spoke mentioned that. So there was a paradigm shift that occurred in the district, and this is where the violations of the IEP come in. So I'm just going to focus on that because I think it's where the bang for your buck will come in. The students' IEPs are written very specifically. They establish what services they'll have, how many hours a week those services will be delivered, who will deliver those services, and then any accommodations or modifications that need to be made to the curriculum. We were at first duped into the idea that we were going to have this wonderful program that was going to be created. We got together, we met, and towards the end of the school year, the new program descriptions came out. The new program descriptions did not align with the current IEPs. So a student that was served in what we call the Foundations program was then just shifted over into the new Behavior Adjustment program. I met at least 20 times with Dr. Conley over last year attempting to resolve the issue between where the specialized program students were going to go. Again, it's a lower number of the overall special education population, but to no avail. Same thing, no matter how you explain that all these IEPs are going to be in violation, you know, there's no program room for them to go to where these services are being delivered. There's no specialized instruction in emotional development and behavior adjustment. It's not going to happen. I questioned again how we were all going to fit at the two high schools. That was easily resolved because if you don't follow small group instruction, then we both fit at Tollgate and Pilgrim. It's very simple. If I can have a class with 27 kids in it, put a special ed teacher in there, a regular ed teacher in there, as opposed to running two classes of like 12 and 14, obviously I now gained a classroom space. So that's how we fit at the two high schools, solution solved. So most of the IEPs that are currently active in the system are being violated, specifically the groups of students that were served by specialized programs within special education. So they would have access to a room to deal with their social emotional needs. So it could have been an alternative learning program for severe behavior issues or just an emotional program, a behavior support, whatever it was. All of those IEPs are currently they're just being violated because those services do not exist as written in the IEP, and it's impossible to provide the service hours that are written in there. Then there was a gigantic push by central administration to eliminate any student that was in a co-taught science or history class. So the three high schools, Pilgrim, Vets, and Tollgate, were directed to remove any student that was in co-taught history or science and just have them in English and math because that's only place where their disability presented. Because if you had a reading goal, a writing goal, and a math goal, why would you need assistance in history and science? So we explained again from our professional point of view why that disability follows students into those two classes to no avail. At the time, the teachers at Vets and Pilgrim refused to comply. Unfortunately, our colleagues at Tollgate were in a completely different situation. They were under the leadership of an interim department head, and they just went full-fledged and created a backlog of paperwork for central administration, because there's some 80 IEPs that are sitting in draft mode, because at the end of the year, they had to call meetings, send home, do whatever they could, and tell parents, oh, by the way, the meeting we had where we told you the support was needed in these two classes, we can't provide it next year because the district's not going to provide it. So we show up at the school year this year, walk into the disaster, which is now well documented. You know, you're looking at anywhere from 40 to 60% IEPs in a class of 27. You have kids that are college prep, reading above grade level. You have kids that are the first grade level, all in the same class. So the district solution, instead of complying with the IEP, complying with small group instruction, specialized instruction, was to hire a boatload of teaching assistants who are phenomenal and a fantastic help in the current situation. Unfortunately, they do not provide the services that are written into the IEP that say a case manager, a special educator is supposed to provide that service, not a teaching assistant. So now every classroom has three adults in it, 27 kids. So you're dealing with that issue. To make matters worse for a group of our students that were in what we used to call the co-op classes, those were the classes that had students exclusively with IEPs, a special education teacher, and then the general education teacher would come into the room and act as the primary instructor, because that's what RIDE asked for. RIDE wants, you know, you deserve to have a general ed instructor that's highly qualified in that content area. Absolutely great model. It worked well. Doesn't work for all students. Some students are better off in the co-taught, where there's a mix of general and special education. Problem being, mathematics. Students are exposed to Algebra 1. If you look at the district website, co-op Algebra 1 students covered 14 standards. The general ed students in Algebra 1 covered 44 standards. So, those students were moved from that environment where they were taught 14 standards, small group instruction, exclusively in an IEP grouping with two teachers, into a geometry class or an Algebra 2 class, whatever they happen to be on the way to go to next. So now I sit in a nice geometry class with 26 students. 50% of them have IEPs. Six of them never took Algebra 1. They took Algebra 1 co-op. So I've emailed our director, I've emailed the secondary director, I've emailed everyone I can think of, I've spoken saying, we are now on day 34, my elementary compadres, thank you, day 34 of the school year. I have kids staring me in the face. Mr. General, can I please go to guidance? No, you can't go to guidance. What do you need to go to guidance for? We're in the middle of class, we're doing this. I am in the wrong class. And I looked right at him and I said, we are working on it. We are going to come up with a solution. And lo and behold, after three parent meetings and a nice side conversation with an advocate who I just met and is now my best friend, phone calls were made. And so guess what they're doing? They're having a special school committee meeting. They're hiring another science teacher. They're hiring a math teacher. They're going to somehow work out this Algebra 2 issue. And then they're going to move on to the geometry issue. Well, our quarter closes in 2 weeks. So when all those kids receive F marks, and they're going to fail the class because they do not meet the standard. So you have now a choice, a moral choice. What am I supposed to do? Do I give those kids a capacity grade and allow the district to continue to railroad us and say, well, obviously it's working? Or do you give the kid a fail mark and say, he did not meet the standard? So what I did on the three IEP meetings I've had so far this year is I specifically wrote in on the front page under needs, student was placed into a math class without meeting the prerequisite, because they did not. So legally, I now have given my parent a tool. They can go get compensatory services, get that kid tutored or whatever. But how long are we going to wait? Second quarter, after midterms, until we straighten this out. So the district K through 12 has been dismantled as far as special education is concerned. They dismantled the programs at the elementary school levels. They did it at the junior high levels. They did it at the high school levels. It does not function. I show up every single day, and I am basically a bouncer in a classroom. That is what you are paying me $70,000 a year to do. Keep your head up. Don't do that. Don't talk to her. Please don't do that. Let's go out in the hall and have a conversation. Don't touch him. Put your phone away. I am not providing specialized instruction in any way, shape, or form. That is all I am able to do, and it does not work. So my other question is, I don't know what the end, the means to the end is going to be with this right now. Apparently, no matter what we say, they completely ignore us. They could care less. The good doctor is coming into our school tomorrow to have a meeting with us one-on-one because that's the way she operates. And I don't know what I'm supposed to discuss with her, except for I would like a solution for my six kids that are sitting in geometry failing miserably who have no idea what concepts are being taught because they weren't offered the opportunity last year. So whatever you can do, I'd appreciate, but I really don't know what you can do at this point unless you somehow have the ability to start firing people. Good luck.
Hi, Tracy McDermott. I'm a teacher assistant. I've been a teacher assistant for 15 years in the district. I wasn't going to speak tonight, and I always say that, and I always get up here and yell about something. But the number of people that came up here to discuss issues of students with severe behaviors that are in the classroom, I had to get up here and say something. For the last 4 years, I've worked as a teacher assistant in an ASD therapeutic program. That was a program for students that were on the autism spectrum, but that had severe behavior issues. And because of safety within classrooms, were put into our class. In the 4 years that we were there, we had 15 students, 80% of which exited into least restrictive programs after they left our program. That's how successful we were. We had 3 students that eventually were outplaced on the recommendation of the staff in the room because they needed more help than we could give them, and we knew that. It took sometimes months for that to happen, but eventually that happened. That we were told in the spring of last year that our program was going to be eliminated because, as I was told, and we were told by Dr. Connolly and staff underneath her, there was not a need. Those students basically didn't exist anymore. They weren't out there. I was at a parent communication advisory committee meeting, which I have sat on that board since 2006, since the existence of that committee. Dr. Connolly, with much pleading from the committee, came and addressed us at multiple meetings to answer questions. I think I spoke about my classroom and the issues with behavior within the district for about 2 hours and 20 minutes straight. Her response to me was, "Your room is being closed because the students no longer exist. They refused to put any students in our classroom for the last year and a half that we were open. Although data to the roof, she loves data, every second, every day, for every week for 4 years on every single student and progress and the success rates they were having being integrated back into the regular ed classrooms." Her response was, at first the students didn't exist. Then finally we got to the point, well, maybe they do, but isn't it better that they're in their homeschools in the least restrictive environment? My response to that was, they are not in their homeschools because they were not safe in their homeschools. And until they learn the strategies to be safe and to be successful in those classrooms, the chaos is going to happen, and that's what's happening this year. When I suggested the fact that by placing those students in a classroom of 20, 22, 24 students in a regular ed classroom, because our students, although they're in a special ed classroom, they have IEPs, they have autism, they were academically on level students. These students did the classroom work and the testing that the students in their regular ed classes took. No different. They were not alternately assessed. There was no difference. She told me that those classrooms were the least restrictive. My suggestion was, for those children, those classes are the most restrictive. The anxiety level of our students is exacerbated by 22 children in the classroom. They act out. They tip chairs. They throw things. They flip furniture. They swear. They lash out at people because they're overwhelmed. That environment is overwhelming for them. They need to have an ability to say, this is too much for me. I need to go back down to our classroom. The therapeutic classrooms in the primary, in the elementary schools are at WICS. There is a primary and an intermediate. In the old administration, those classrooms were capped at 6 students, maybe 7, for safety reasons, with 2 assistants, a behavior specialist, and a teacher. Those classrooms at WICS right now are at 11 each, as far as I know. Anywhere, I've heard anywhere from 10 to 13. It's unsafe conditions. They started the school year with that. So that means that every single student around the district that came into the classrooms acting out, there's nowhere to put them because they closed our classroom. They could have removed the ASD label, left us just therapeutic. We could have taken all of those students, but they closed it. That classroom still sits empty. We had separate rooms where they could separate from each other. We had a quiet area. We had a safe zone that they came in and padded for safety, where the kids could go and de-escalate. Every staff member in our classroom has a background in behavior. The teacher had a background in behavior. We had a behavior specialist. Myself, the other TA, we have a background in behavior. I have a certification as a BIT team behavior intervention TA certification from Dr. Connolly. It was only given to 6 people. And she closed our room, sent everybody going, and now kids are evacuating classrooms because of unsafe behavior. You know, it's only October. We've already had at least 3 kids that I know of been sent out of district. Our goal was to keep them. One of them was in my building, in a regular ed classroom. We spent all of last year saying she needs more. No one listened. Now, out of district, at a cost of $50,000 to $100,000 a student. So, I don't know what the solution is. You need to open more rooms for behavior, keeping them in regular ed classrooms. It's a great idea, but they're not ready for it. They need to be shown the strategies to be successful and to be safe. And our kids learned that, and they closed our room. And they all and the superintendent heard this. I've gone to school committee members, and I've spoken multiple times with Dr. Connolly. We all have. So that's all I have to say.
Excuse me. Tracy, you're welcome to answer the question, or if someone else would like to take it, but I continue hearing a lot of concern, and rightfully so, about safety. And I recall during the new session of school this year, there was issues brought up to me about the safety of some of our IEP students with physical disabilities, those youngsters that perhaps are in a wheelchair or on crutches or whatever the case may be. Is there a concern about the safety of these youngsters, particularly the ones that are on the second floor, if these buildings have to be evacuated in an emergency situation? Is there a plan in place to get the special needs, special needs, physical needs, safely out of that building?
For me personally, I would say yes. Those students and the students I'm speaking of are completely different students. Safety issues as far as children in wheelchairs on second floors. I currently, because I am no longer a therapeutic TA, work with a student in a wheelchair. Personally, I'd carry my child down those stairs in a fire. The plan, as it is everywhere, you put the red card up in the fire safety window, the fire department would come and would evacuate you from the top floor. There are 2 of us in the building that are one-on-one with students in wheelchairs. We both have other people in the building, whether it be OT, PT, speech, resource teachers. We have our own plan in place. we're not waiting for the fire department to come. We'll carry those kids out. So, you know, I don't know about the district as a whole, but we have safety plans in place.
Yeah, totally.
But those children and these children, these are behavior disorder children who need, it's a whole different program. And eliminating them or maxing out the numbers is not safe. We've had multiple TAs severely injured in the last few years. And just to address the large number of TAs that have been hired recently, 24 is the number of TAs that were hired after our job fair was completed. At the end of last year, 2 months before school was over, they took the TA that was in our therapeutic classroom and the behavior specialist to put with students that were behavior problems in other buildings, saying they couldn't come to our room, but we're going to take your staff and we're going to put them out. And that's, they're plugging holes all over the district with TAs, behaviors. Everyone is overwhelmed. And exiting 22 children on a daily basis because a child is flipping a desk or throwing a chair is unacceptable in a first grade classroom.
Sure, for sure.
So,
thank you, Tracy.
Well, I've been saying it every, you know, every school committee meeting that comes up, you know I'm up there, so. Oh, I can say a lot in 2 minutes, Joanne. Well, the problem is currently I don't work in those classrooms, so the knowledge comes from all of the teachers around the district who have this problem in their classroom. It's at Robertson, it's at Norwood, it is all over. So those teachers need to talk to Darlene, and Darlene needs to get you the names. But the response I got was they don't exist or they belong in their home schools. We all do. Well, and those of us that work in those programs, because I've spent 10 years in the summer working with preschoolers to third grade behavior students every summer for 10 years. Those kids exist. Those kids need a place where they can learn the strategies to be successful in a regular classroom. Those are smart kids. They just don't know how to control themselves. And they need a structured environment with people that know what they're doing. So.
Well done, Tracy.
Good evening. My name is Dave Tester. I'm the parent of an IEP student. And this is going to take off a little on what Tracy said. The definition of least restrictive environment is a very elastic term. You could define it as having very small classrooms, or you can define it what appears to be the way we've currently defined it, to have very large classrooms. Because Tracy's example is a perfect example of how you can play with words. Right? The behavioral student's least restrictive environment can be interpreted as being in a class of 22, right? Because that's least restrictive, but emotionally, it's probably the most restrictive. So my concern, and Darlene and Mr. Pierce, you probably can help me here, as can anyone else. I think we've adopted a definition of least restrictive environment that's almost a perversion of what least restrictive environment is. And we went from a ratio of IEP to non-IEP kids that was, we'll say, this big. We've gone to a ratio that's now this big with a co-teaching model that, if correct me if I'm wrong, many teachers have not had exposure to co-teaching, right? So then that's why we're asking for PD. Okay, because I'm hearing teachers asking for professional development. So, number one, a class of 25 with 12 IEP kids.
Yeah.
No, Ken, you got to my point more quickly than I was going to get to my point, because that's my point.
David, excuse me 1 minute. To speak, you must come to the mic. The reason being is the audio will not be picked up unless you're at the mic. So a lot of your conversation probably was not recorded. So please just step up. We'll stay here as long as you need us to. But you got to be at the mic.
But
thank you.
But Mr. General, that was precisely the point that I was leading up to. Okay, because to me it sounds like we have unmanageable ratios in the classrooms. Number one. Okay, so with a class of 25 with 13 IEP kids, some of whom have behavioral problems, I don't know how, regardless of the co-teaching or not, I think the ratios are too high. So I don't know how the IEP student is served. I don't know how the regular ed student is served, and I don't know how the teacher is served, or the teachers, or the TAs. So some of the other stuff that concerns me, it's as if we've developed this model and said, well, let's let them fail first, and that'll determine whether or not we should change course, okay? So that's illogical to me. So, and you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. So I have tremendous concerns, especially about the ratios, because I don't think they're sustainable. Ooh, okay. Obviously, we're having problems with
Dave, the bottom button, just try turning it off and then turn it back on again.
So I think, what was my point? But the ratios are too high. We can't attract the teachers, okay? We have teachers like Mr. Buchanan who had my kids. So when he stands up here and speaks, it carries a lot of weight for me. So to have a class of 48% IEP and you don't have another teacher with you, it is a recipe for disaster, okay? And it kills me to think that we're going to have kids lose a year at least, okay, until we can come up with a fix for this, because it has to get fixed. It's not sustainable, and this leads to people leaving the district, wanting to leave the schools, and everything else. And to Karen, I know you and I, we all agree, our schools used to be a magnet for people to move into this city. So we're not that magnet anymore, and the special ed portion of that is a big contributing factor. So this can be fixed. I mean, I don't think it can't be fixed. My hope is beyond hope. We have to get this thing fixed, because we have to be able to serve that most vulnerable population of our students, because to not serve them is just shameful. So thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Our kids don't need a fix. We know what works. It's worked for years. Warwick had one of the best, if not the best, special ed programs in the state. What we need is a fix in the administration, and this special ed director and superintendent need to go, because they are hurting our kids, and our kids are falling behind in special ed more and more every day. It's unacceptable. The rest of the committee doesn't want to hear it, and if you go to the meetings, you know that. I fight, and they think I'm the damn Antichrist.
Okay. Hi, can you hear me?
My name is Susan French. I'm a parent. My son Jacob has an autism diagnosis, and whoops. Can I take this out? I don't know. This is like weird. I'm new at this, so I don't know what I'm doing. Okay. He's in seventh grade at Vets this year. Last year, I've never had a problem at all with the school department until this year. For the past 3 years at Holloman. Fantastic program. I love Holloman. He had a wonderful teacher, Stephanie Bucci, who was fantastic. She no longer is employed by the Warwick Schools anymore. It's such a shame because she was fantastic. Anyway, I was told my son was going to Winman into an autism classroom, 6 to 8 kids, where he would have his PTOT speech, and then with the help of his TA, integrated with, typically developing children as peer models. He's been doing this forever. He's been successful at it. I've been lied to. I was told that because there's so many children in Warwick with autism that they had to create another autism-based classroom, the same one that's successful at Winman, but it's going to be held at Vets. Same thing, exact classrooms for middle school, one at Winman, one at Vets. Okay, I was told your son, because of where I live, has to go to Vets. Okay, whatever. So at this point, there was no teacher hired at all. I guess for a long time. Now we have a teacher who is hired. School starts. Let me back up for a minute. Usually when there's a transition for my son, we've done with the teacher he currently has, they do a couple of little field trips, visit over the summer. I would take him to visit. So he's familiar. Doesn't like transition. Okay. Couldn't do that this year. We had that last-minute call of the orientation night on Monday or something, and, that was like unorganized chaos as far as I was concerned because it was ridiculous. Okay, so fast forward. My son is... I just found out 2 weeks ago, tomorrow it'll be, my son is not in that program. He is in placed with what I was told, severe, profound, medically fragile classroom. I was shocked. I'm like, what? Is from what I'm being told, he's extremely violent and behavioral. I had to actually look at the folder because I'm like, she has to be talking about somebody else. My son's never been violent and behavioral. We've never had problems like that. Well, now we're starting to, 6 weeks into school now or whatever? We're starting to see these, aggressions at home. He has two younger brothers and I'm like, okay. He's always loved school. He's loved the consistency. He enjoys it. Not this year. He's fighting me. Doesn't want to go to school. Can't stand to be there, from what I'm understanding. Okay. So when I met 2 weeks ago and saw the classroom he was in, I was really kind of overwhelmed when I walked in there. And then I was like, isn't this supposed to be an autism classroom? And everybody's like looking at each other. They didn't know what to say. It's like, can you talk? Can you not talk? It shouldn't be like that. Definitely feel the tension. My son saw me. You know what my son does? Because as much as he can tell you, how was school today? What'd you do? Lay down. Lay down? What are you talking about? Lay down. Well, I know what he was trying to tell me because when I walked in the classroom, he was laying down in a quiet room, which he does all day. They looked really busy. Everybody's running around, and there's, medical children in the classroom that obviously it's very important. They, nurses in there, and, That's their life, of course. But there was my son and another student who he's been in school with, the same class all these years. My son was laying on the floor in a quiet room, and this other child, who they're the only two with autism in that class, I'm finding out, because other children have been pulled out. Because at the beginning of the year, I heard there was 13 kids, one brand new special education teacher that was recently hired before school started, and one TA. Now there is the three TAs, so that does help, but it's still, from what I saw, that's not even enough to what's going on in that classroom. They need help in there. And it looks, I know I wouldn't want to go there. I walked in, I thought I was walking into like a prison, really. It looked like a prison. No wonder why my son wanted to. He ran up to me, jumped up off the floor and grabbed my hand like, bye-bye, let's go. You know, he doesn't like it. So I put in the phone calls and, you know, I actually get a phone call before I get to that phone call. I have some Jennifer Connelly I have to speak to. Okay, phone calls back and forth. And basically, all I wanted to know was, with this consolidation, whose job was it to, decide what students, special education-wise, what students are placed in what classrooms, in what school? Who makes those decisions?
We cannot speak about consolidation.
Huh?
No conversation about consolidation.
No, but what I mean is, why was that overlooked is my point. And why was I told my son was going to be in an autism-based program and he's not? There was no, I mean, I don't know if you know anything about autism, but they're visual learners. They need schedules, you know, everything. There was nothing. There's nothing. He's got nothing. So I can see why he's extremely anxious, off-the-wall anxiety, and becoming behavioral now. He's never been that way. So I asked, talking to, what her name was. Last Friday I spoke to one of the women, it'll come to me, and I told her, she's in charge, supposedly. So, Jennifer Connelly works under her. I can't remember her name offhand. Yeah. Thank you. Yep. And I told her, she's a fast talker. And I was like, well, slow down a minute. Like, you know, I want an answer. And I, you know, dodging my questions is how I felt. And basically, I told her, I said, well, I don't think he's placed in the right classroom. And you know what? I know, you know, Warwick's small. Everybody knows everybody. And, I found a lot of information between then and now. I said I wanted a meeting with, or not a meeting, but just to go visit the program at Winman. The one he was supposed to go to and the one that, you know, the vets was supposed to be like. Well, you know, we have to, call ahead, ask the teacher's permission, the principal, whatever you need to do, that's fine. First quarter, I'm told, ends November 7th. I'll give you to first quarter. Like, I want to go visit that classroom and see. Okay, she said she was working on it. I get a phone call this morning from a Cobb, Christine Cobb. Yeah. I basically was told that that program's full. There will be no opportunity for me to go visit that classroom because it's maxed out. And basically, the only thing they can offer my son Jacob is where he's at now, because that's appropriate placement for him. That's bullshit. I'm sorry. Bullshit. Excuse me?
Who was the person who told you that your child would be in the autism class originally? Okay.